Good afternoon. This is Rob. Who's on, please?
This is Trent.
Hey, Trent. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good.
Good. I'm not sure if Kim's going to jump on or not. She was going to, but she's on another call right now. So, let's see if she's able to jump on here.
Let me double check my schedule here in a second.
I've got a Merrill call too on our research system at 2:30, so I'll have to jump off today actually on time.
Okay, all right.
So I went through chapter 2, segmentation, and looked through those questions, came up with some thoughts, some ideas. And like what we've talked about so far, so we've talked about the team about that. Basically, our idea of trying to reinvent the team somewhat since we're in transition, focusing on the extreme personalization, deep planning, and greater efficiency is what we're working on right now for this year. And then the second major goal is to hone our pitch and articulate our value and position for growth being the third factor. The seven principles you had are very strong. Of embracing challenge, growth over fear, no to negative, giving you give. So we got a lot out of the last call, definitely.
Okay.
And looking at a lot of the homework here for this week on target market, natural target niche, or the natural niche, the target niche, the absolute minimum, the target minimum. But yeah, I'll let you jump in and get us going here.
Well, I've kind of used you guys as a model in terms of what kind of the future of the industry looks like. And that's a real nice compliment, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
But I call it the modified family office group.
And it's, I like that.
Yeah. And I was trying to actually, quantify it in terms of what you do.
Okay.
Let me just write this down.
That's what we really, someone said that, and it just makes sense that that's what we have been trying to do for 3 years now, is extreme personalization.
Yep.
Down to the point where we know what kind of events people want to go to, what kind of gifts they would like to receive, And then the core things of how often they want to be called, what they like to review in the meetings, what their concerns are, the needs of the children, the various complexities of their planning situation and their family. So I think extreme personalization, deep planning, those are two. And then concierge.
Yeah, that's
providing the concierge level, where they're not getting the call center, they're not getting a standard pat answer that, hey, we'll get back with you in a week, but this is very important to us, and we're working on it right now, and we're going to get back with you at this specific time.
So I think, to me, I just wrote them down. Let me tell you what they were. What's kind of interesting, this morning, one of the guys asked me, he's from South America, and he was asking me what it was that made Supernova different. How do I explain it to somebody? I want to explain it to my clients in South America so that they, it's a basic fundamental question, right? So there's two different, I might as well share both of these. Things that came out of it. And then the modified family office group thing. I like that. And this is a guy that does all his business in South America. Obviously, he's Peruvian, and so there's a language issue. But we do great together. But I said. Well, one of the things, so what makes, why do you want to sign up for Supernova? For one, you eliminate the insidious fees of time, specifically procrastination, phone tags, interruptions. Okay?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So when you think about you as a client, you're being interrupted during a meeting, during surgery, and then you got to play phone tag, and how long does that last, and how important was it? Was it urgent? Was it, you know, what's the degree of importance of the phone call? And then it turns out that you got out of surgery because it was a check-in, you know. So really, really silly, right?
Absolutely.
And then not only is the client, that brings us to being unprepared. The client is unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then Supernova prepares the client. We give them an agenda. We give them an enclosure. And we're going to talk about something. And then we give them, and then they don't have to, you know, be responsible for remembering everything because we give them an executive summary. So we're adding all these services that are, if client, it's kind of like Starbucks. They didn't know about Starbucks until they had a Starbucks. They didn't know they needed, right? They didn't know what a cappuccino was or a double latte or a whatever until they had it, and then they liked it and they wanted it. So these clients don't know what they're missing is the point. The executive summary, so, you know, it's a compliance benefit as you eliminate I say and you say. And at the same time, you're also making it so the client doesn't have to remember and be embarrassed because he didn't do what he was responsible for doing after your meeting. It helps you to fully implement the financial plan. Otherwise, you're just like every other person selling a book. But with 1242, you fully implement the financial plan.
Right.
Okay? And then the notes that you take on every call are just a good reminder and keep you up and make you know the client better. The client then opens up like a flower. That benefits you, but it also builds trust. Okay? That's why they open up, because you build trust well beyond normal because you're doing what you said. Trust is built by doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And so that trust allows the client to, or that frequency allows the client to trust you, which makes them very happy because they want to trust you. But they can't unless they learn to trust you. It's something that happens over time. It's like women want to trust their husbands. You know, other people want to trust each other.
Right.
But sometimes they're skeptical and they can't until you give them a reason to trust you.
Right. Which is repetitive follow through, repetitive follow up of doing what you say you're going to do.
So let's call that a reason to trust. Okay? All right, so those are just a few of the things that, you know, why be a Supernova client. And then for the other client, what I wrote was this. I said, you know, this extreme personalization or modified family office group, What do you guys do for me? You don't even know what all the things you do for me. But recently you've helped me with my quarterly taxes. And frankly, that was a big deal. And then when Linda said, would you like us to pay those for you? And I said, oh, that would be wonderful. That was a wow moment, okay?
That was a Starbucks cappuccino you didn't know existed.
Correct. And I went, in my brain, I went, wow, that's wonderful.
I love it. That's awesome.
Now, how often do you get a wow moment? It's very hard to get one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We get it most through recognition or through appreciation gifts, through events, and I think we get it through service not as often. That may be more like once a month. But we had another case where a guy's buying a house in Naples, and we didn't even know about an LMA. He didn't know. He thought he had to sell everything and take capital gains. So we created a brand new way of doing this for him. And, oh, by the way, we can have it done Monday, and he thought it was going to take another 2 weeks.
It's wonderful. So that was my third thing, securitized loans. I mean, most efficient lending system in the world. And do it very efficiently and very effectively. For you guys, you took, and I had failed to file my family foundation was done by a different estate planning firm, and they had never followed up, and no one had filed with the state that I had a family office group. We're operating every year just as if everything's great. It went on for like 5 or 6 years that way. And then somebody at the state said, you're not in compliance, you're out of business, basically. And Linda and Kim or somebody, Linda particularly, went and investigated it, figured out how to file the form, helped me pay the penalty, and got me back in good standing. And now you guys do that for me.
Yeah.
That's a story, see? That's a story you can tell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you started building those little set pieces and those stories. You mentioned the Nancy Booth story, and that is tremendous. And then the other one I shared with you about the lady who is now spending her money and helping out her kids and grandkids, has great relationships with them. That's
right.
Another good one to add.
Using your money during your lifetime to build better relationships with your family and pass on your values.
If you give while you live, you know where it goes.
Right. You take care of things regarding the family foundation. You pay out salaries. I mean, I know the trust company does, but you guys supervise the trust company, so I don't have to do anything. I hardly ever talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Distributions from the foundation, salaries, agenda, all that stuff. Charitable funding and tracking the amount, when it's due, where, to whom, how much, what's the best source, is it required minimum distribution or a highly appreciated stock, what would be most efficient, most effective. You're not giving tax advice, you're just giving common sense advice.
Yeah. And follow up.
Those are five things just off the top of my head that you do that I don't think the average person does, right?
Yeah, and that comes from Supernova is the interesting thing about it. That all flows from the Supernova process. And then the way that we built it out and having the agenda flow into the goal map, flow into the meeting follow-up, which we copy to the Merrill Lynch Control Panel, which completes the annual review. So from an advisor standpoint, the efficiency gains are tremendous of our time. And then our service scores go up and our retention scores go up, which means we make more money long term because we're keeping clients and growing clients.
Right. Well, you're not discussing, you know, you're not paying fees for performance. You're eliminating that issue. And you're talking about fees for an experience. The same reason a client is willing to pay, you know, $100 a piece for a dinner for the experience. The food's great, but the experience was spectacular. The overall dining experience.
Yeah,
and
$6 for a latte at Starbucks, too.
Sure, absolutely.
Experience.
It's, you know what they're paying for? They're paying for a feeling.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can make the coffee at home, and it tastes almost exactly the same. But what they're really paying for is a feeling. And human beings have a great desire to feel safe, comfortable, and repetition is a big part of that. So in today's world, there isn't really the living room feeling. So Starbucks has become the living room.
Yeah.
Where people go and they have community.
You know, the other big thing on that, too, is being known. It's even bigger. It's even more of an impact when you walk in and they know your order.
Well, That's it. It's a feeling. A feeling of it's repetition. It's safe. It feels good. It tastes reasonably good. And they're willing to commit to $6 a day in order to start their day feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say the first person you meet in the morning is very important. So when you walk in, and the person greets you by name and has your coffee ready, I mean, you feel pretty good.
Yeah.
So the question is, are we creating that feeling that we're important, that the client is, does the client feel important, taken care of, safe, etc.? So that's really what you're selling, is a feeling.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, and then the peace of mind is the ultimate. That's the holy grail, is when people are just at peace and they don't worry.
Yeah.
You can't even quantify the price of taking worry out of someone's life and anxiety.
Well, think about
what it does to your health, what it does to your cardiovascular system when someone's worried, stressed out. If we can take that away, it really improves their lives.
Well, you did that for me with the Family Foundation when I wasn't. The anxiety of having screwed something up and then having somebody else fix it for you and then making it go away permanently. It's just, now, here, this is really interesting, and I'm really having a little bit of fun with this, and I'm sure you have found the same thing. But I'm on the board of this school on the island. And I had my first meeting. I'm about to have my second meeting coming up in February. And the people on the finance committee are extremely wealthy. Okay? And the question is, who do they do business with and why? And two of the guys have already declared that they do business with Vanguard. Okay?
Yeah.
Which I find just, I can't wait to find out why. Because it certainly isn't economics.
It had to be a bad experience. They had a Mark Jaffe type or someone who fried
one of them. One of them did business with Northern Trust and did not have a good experience.
With Northern Trust? Or one of the gold standards, supposedly.
Well, it's interesting, and so the question, you know, so I'll be very interested. The other guy, I don't know who he does business with, but what I find on the island is that most of the guys that do business with Merrill Lynch are the guys that have got somewhere between, say, 5 and 20 million or 25 million. And when you get above that, I'm not sure, but this is going to be a great window into the real wealth on the island.
Oh, like, yeah.
This is where some of it resides, you know, in helping out the school.
Which is really cash out of the nation. That's one of the wealthiest places in the country.
Right. So it's, you know, there's a, it's a school that has 60 students and an $8 million endowment.
60 well-educated students.
Well, actually, they're it's elementary school, and they're kids of the people that work on the island.
Hmm.
So they're not necessarily super bright or well-prepared.
Wow.
Okay?
What
is so the performance, of the school is, has been fair, you know, pretty good, but not, like you think, spectacular, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a place that when the bartender or the girl that cleans the pools or the houses comes, she brings her child to school at 8 o'clock and picks them up at 5. So we provide that service for them. So it's the pro, you know, the golf pros' kids and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. It's going to be a very interesting window for me as a student of wealth, right? To kind of undo this. But my question is, okay, so it's great for you to do business with Fidelity or with Vanguard, but, you know, what is Mrs. what's Claire going to do if you're not here?
And that was the layering question. That was the one that got out.
That's the question. So to me, the two things that you should be selling is the stories about extreme personalization, but I think a modified office, family office group is a, even though people don't understand it, is really a better picture of what you're offering.
How is it modified?
Well, a full family office group would cost anywhere from $1 million to $2 million to run.
Ah.
Just to run it as expenses.
Yeah.
So you couldn't, unless you were part of a family office group, you know, and you probably have to have $100 million. And you'd be part of a family office group. You know what it is. I mean, it's the guy, the head guy, and he does all the investments, and he hires people and gets your son into Princeton and gets him out of jail and gets him off drugs and, you know, pays your taxes and takes care of everything.
Right.
Okay? Kind of a fixer for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so but you guys can provide all the services that they provide and kind of explore what else you could do. So you're not full family office group, but you're kind of a modified family office group.
Yeah. Okay, that makes
for
sense.
For a very fair price, you see.
Right. It's a variable cost rather than setting up all this fixed cost. So it's basically a sharing economy applied to financial. To the financial world.
Let's just say for $100,000, instead of spending $2 million, you can get almost the same thing for $100,000.
You get all the attributes you need. You still have to have your outside financial profile. You have to have your accountant and your attorney outside. So that's the only thing that's unbundled, but we do everything else. We do all the implementation.
Yeah, but you can create the virtual family office group. You might want to call it the virtual family office.
I like that.
Yeah, I do like that better, don't I?
Those are both. Yeah, the virtual family office. Yeah, that is really strong. And then the personal CFO. You talked about that in the videos, too.
Right. The personal CFO, their CEO, your CFO, it's board of directors, and you have your agenda and your checklist summary, and that's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Here's something that you might think about. I've always encouraged everybody to have centers of influence, right? Have niches, and then mastermind groups, and then niche mastermind groups, okay? The reality is that compliance with that is very poor, okay? These are the ways that they, you know, that I've seen the best of the best grow their businesses, okay? And the question is, why doesn't everybody do it? And it's because they don't want to do it. It's too much work. And it takes effort and takes patience and all the things that make people not perform.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, it's deferred gratification, and it it's the year, and it's, you know, all those things that we talked about, those seven values. So here's a way of doing it that you might want to, I'd like you to explore.
Okay.
And that's joining a mastermind group.
Okay.
They are in every city. And usually they cost money. But, you know, the payoff would be ridiculous if it was the right group.
The one that I've seen are through the John Maxwell Coaching Organization.
Okay.
Mastermind, when I searched, that's what I found. What is this through, or is there an organizing entity or an umbrella?
No, I just see it as this guy I'm coaching in Boston.
Or is it just maybe it's finding whatever it is in our city? It's a different iteration, a different name.
Right. So, you know, whether it's John Maxwell's mastermind group or I don't care. The point is, who are members? That's important. You don't want it to be a bunch of junior people.
Right.
You want it to be people that can introduce you to your minimum.
Okay. You know, the funny thing is, I went to a reading group Thursday night. It's called Trinity Forum, and we read Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail.
Yeah.
And I actually met three mega investors there. One actually has his own company, his own holding company. It's his own family office that he has other people that he lets co-invest with him. Wow, so that may be. Okay, go ahead, though. I interrupted.
So that's like a, what do they call it? It's not a book club. What do they call it?
They call it a Trinity Forum reading group, or, yeah, reading group, just a reading group. So every quarter they're reading a book. And it's through, it's out of D.C.
Hmm. Now, is Trinity associated with the Episcopal Church, or is it just?
I think it's either Presbyterian or Episcopal, but they that's not really front and center. It's more of just a social engagement, thinking, helping the community, and this one was all about fighting injustice. It's really interesting.
Well, that might be something that...
This guy's name was Eric Morris. I don't know if you'd heard of him in town.
No.
He's the one that has his own. He's done a lot of stuff. He's done some very interesting work.
So you have... I mean, you have done a great job in terms of the board membership, becoming president, running that. How did that work out for you?
Oh, it worked out great. Well, we have the international organization now, the Kiwanis president. Now we've got about a $46 million total relationship with Kiwanis. I ended up, I had lunch with a guy Wednesday who has his money with Stifel, with Dave Nall, about $16 million. He was referred to me by a client out of the Kiwanis organization and has still provided me just a way to rub elbows with business owners, with senior business owners in town. The new one, though, is now I'm actually the board affairs committee chair for the Indianapolis Symphony.
Hello.
So I'm running the committee. I've never done it before, but I'm on the executive committee of the symphony board now. So I'm very often spending time with Yvonne Shaheen, who is Yvonne is a dynamo.
Will you tell her I said hello?
Oh, yeah. Do you know her from Marquette, or how do you know?
I know her from Marquette, and she loves me.
She either loves or hates people. So we're both on the same side.
She loved me, and she hated some other people to the point where she dropped off the board because she thought people were treating me so poorly. And I don't care. I'm used to it from being an app manager of FAs, you know. You get some stuff on the deal. But she was so upset by that. Right, that she quit. And so I just tell her how much I enjoy being with her and serving with her and how much I think of her.
I will.
Yeah, we did a nice trip down to, before we expanded, we did a trip to North Carolina and visited different facilities.
Yeah, so that's who I'm able to spend time with her, and a lot of people like her. And then I'm on the Museum of Art Science Committee now. So I'm interacting with a lot of high-level people there. And then the Harrison Center is actually a local arts organization that does community development. And that's how I met Joanna Taft, who's a real networker in town. And she's the one that introduced me to Eric Morris Thursday evening. She knew him. He's a big supporter of that organization.
So how many are you a member of now? Are you still involved with Kiwanis?
Yeah, I'm just a member of that now. But I organized their international convention when they had it here in town about 3 years ago.
Wow.
And the thing about once you learn to do it is it's basically just quarterbacking. It's not a full-time job. You basically
have
the meetings.
You just make sure everybody...
You follow up. You send out the email reminder for the meetings. It's pretty simple stuff, but it's a pretty rare ability. It's rare and valuable. That is just regular follow-up and doing what you say you're going to do.
And then... Okay,
I'm on board chair of another, so I'm on 5 boards right now.
Jesus Christ, you should be in my book.
Hey, I'm glad to. We can find a good story.
Well, seriously, if you get, okay, so you're a board chair of what?
The board chair of a thing called Deeper Walk International. So it's actually a counseling, like a faith-based counseling organization. And the guy's got but it's actually leadership. He's got a book called Rare Leadership that is based on emotional maturity, essentially, of developing yourself as an emotional, and it's right brain, left brain. It's very interesting stuff of basically the leader's left brain is right-handed, which is task-oriented, and that's where most leaders get promoted because they're very good at getting tasks done. But your right brain is where your identity and your relational skills come from and your actual security. And that's what causes people to really thrive is the right brain tend to be left-handed people, but you build that right brain side of relational and relationships. And the core of the philosophy is relationships are bigger than problems.
So is this through the church?
It's an independent organization. So it is faith-based, but it's not through any denomination or church. They work with thousands of people.
How did you get involved?
I actually knew the guy. I met him 12, 13 years ago. And I got involved, like I was a customer. He helped me work through the death of my parents, essentially, of just walking through it. And a lot of it is revisualization of memories and remembering it was what you were saying of growth over fear, of viewing these traumatic situations as actual growth and inevitabilities that end up working out for a better good once you get through them.
So then you kind of help others through this organization.
Yeah, so that's a good one. But the 5 boards, but what it goes back to the Jim Lynn thing of it just fires me up. It makes me want to work to support these organizations. It has such a virtuous cycle that and that's the important thing is I tried to get involved with the Classic Car Club of America, and I just don't really care about classic cars. So I really don't care anywhere. Even though I'm a rich people.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean anything to you. So unless you love classic cars, it'd be a stupid way to your time.
All right, and I tried it.
Right.
I love the art museum, and I love live classical music and what the symphony does and these other organizations of helping people grow, helping the community. And then that has just led into when you're doing things you love and you're thriving in it, it's a magnetic quality that people see that and you end up meeting people through that.
Right. So this is your, this is your thing, and this is what you do. And you do it well, and you grew up doing it. It wasn't something that you in the Kiwanis gave you the confidence to do these others.
Right.
Right?
And, yeah, absolutely. Of being
I can't just, that. See, when I tell people to go join one arts organization and one charitable organization, they never do it. Okay?
Well, this that's what I was going to say. This actually came from you in about 2001. And so that's when I got involved. And we looked at it then. It was a dual Jim Cornelius is a big, we looked at the natural niche within our book, and we had a lot of healthcare people. So I joined the Heart Association, and that's when I started getting involved with the IMA. And Idlesworth, Stan Hurt, you give me his name. But it was an entree, and it taught me a lot that the IMA is the only one that stuck, because I really believed in it. But it was your idea in the first place.
Well, actually, somebody did it.
Yeah. It worked. Yeah, but Kiwanis is what gave me, you're right, that's what gave me the confidence to do it, was seeing, hey, this isn't rocket science. This is basically just showing up and calling the meeting to order and holding everyone to task and taking notes and scheduling meetings.
So you're now, you were the president of that. Are you,
yeah.
Are you headed to be president of the rest of them?
Yes. Yeah.
And you, have you been president of any other boards?
I have to think about that. Not of boards. I've been president of initiatives, or like the chair of initiatives within boards. So within Kiwanis, I was the host committee chair, although we called it something different. But that essentially is what it was, and that was like 10,000 people came to Indianapolis, and we organized the international convention for the 100th anniversary of Kiwanis. So Kiwanis is the first one I've been president of. But that led into, I could name about 7 or 8 great relationships that led to.
All right, will you do me a favor and list the relationships that have been built from Kiwanis and the amount of assets that came from that?
Okay.
Okay. And I want you to look good in this. I don't want to paint it as, you know, you did any of this for the money. But I think it's a great story, and it can be told, and I can tell it with just your first name or your name and leave out Merrill Lynch or however. Getting things through Merrill Lynch, I don't think it's going to be as easy this time as it was the last time.
Yeah.
But I did get Blaine approved.
All right.
It almost took me a year to get it done, but.
Oh, yeah, I'll write it up. Yeah. And actually, Marcus, I mentioned the Rare Leadership book. He's got a story about me in there, too.
You're kidding.
Yeah. But they had to change my name. They had to change everything. I didn't give them enough time. We probably could have got it through compliance, but I just didn't give them enough time. And he was up against the book deadline.
Yeah. But What's his name?
Marcus Warner, Warner. And his book's called Rare Leadership, RARE.
Yep, okay.
Which stands for relationships, the first R, and then always be yourself, the importance of identity. The second R is return to joy, of learning the emotional ability to return to a joyful state from a traumatic situation.
Yep.
And then the E is endure hardship well. That as a leader, you're always on display, and you have to endure hardship well for your team.
That's really great. I'm going to have to read that. I'm going to read that.
I'll send you a copy.
Oh, that's great. I will probably I will quote him, because I really believe in that. And when I was tested, you know, Trent, you're always going to be tested, right?
Yeah.
And one of the proudest moments of my life was when I was tested and I came through. Because I had my mentors. I had the values solidly ingrained in me. And when everyone else, you remember the purge that happened when I was
brutal.
Right. And they district director, and then they may be, everybody, I was the last moving district director, by the way. I was the very last one left, and then they finally got me. And because I was 58, right? And they wanted a young guy, right? And it, maybe for all good reasons, I don't know, but we were number one in the region, in the country at the time, and did win the award. And they still decided that it was a bad idea to have me. Okay.
We saw where that came.
But that's not important. What's important was when I went, they notified me. Then they had a meeting in Chicago, and I took my, and I met with my team, and I told them over dinner what had happened. And I told them that I wanted them to represent myself and our district very well with no bitterness. That we were all team players, and they were all going to go to the meeting the next day with their heads high and sit in front. Okay?
Wow. That's strong.
And we did it. And guys were, guys were crying, and guys were pissed, and every other district director was suing the firm and going crazy, and I said, that's not who we are. That's not why we did this. This is not about Rob. This is about the guys that made the decision. This isn't about me. We know what a job we did. We should be proud. We're proud of that. What they are doing, it's like Democrats come in, Republicans are out. It isn't personal. It's like they want their own players.
Yeah.
And I said, and that to me was a time to be tested, okay? And how am I going to react to it? And those guys that I had in that room still today talk about that.
Huh.
So of all the things maybe that I ever did as a leader for them, it was that. It was probably the most important thing I could have done.
Wow.
So what a
hardship. Well, and you were always being yourself. You had the identity. You knew who you were. And this is not about me. This is about a bad decision on the part of the company.
Well, and on the other hand, what a great gift they gave me as an opportunity to train my people, right? Because that was my purpose. Mm-hmm. And Larry Wilson used to say, leaders, managers get business done through people. But leaders get people done through management.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And so if my purpose was to develop really good leaders, that was maybe the best learning lesson I could have ever given them. It wouldn't have happened unless that happened to me.
Yeah.
So in reality, truly, it was a blessing.
Yeah. It's tough to see it at the time when you're in the heart of the storm.
Very hard. Isn't that when you're tested, though, right?
Right. Yeah, I'll mail you a copy of the book. And to your Boca address, Boca Grande?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Maybe I'll send it out from Amazon today.
Thank you.
And I'll write that up. I'm glad to write it up.
Well, I mean, here we are. I'm not going to tell you. What the first thing we do when I consult with people now is I ask them, what are you doing well? How have you been winning? So I want you to write it up, but then I want you to look at each of these organizations, and you can put in their first name or something to protect the innocent. But the idea is that, who are they and how much did they bring you in assets? And then add the whole thing up and say, in 2001, Rob talked about this as an idea. Here's the organizations I've been involved with, and these are the assets that have been gathered, plus the joy it's brought me, the sense of community it's brought me, the friendships it's brought me. I mean, to me, that's what you're telling me. Okay? And so, why waste your time on a mastermind group when we can talk about building a mastermind group though, because of these relationships you already have.
Yeah.
That could be, and we want to talk about niches that maybe you need, or maybe you don't, maybe you already have them.
Yeah.
So, but this is, we're just about out of time here, but I think this has been extremely helpful for me.
Oh, me too.
I cannot tell you how rare this is. Rich Cheryl to you, maybe two other guys in the office. I don't know. Maybe I don't know that. But there aren't many that are willing to do or see the vision of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And do it.
And it's doing good to do good. It's giving to give.
Giving to give. Exactly. That's the thing, right? Giving to give. And then it does come back. It does come back. And you know, Trent, you may not realize this, but I've given away about $5 million.
Wow.
Okay? And you know how much I have.
Yeah. That's a significant portion. But you still got a ton. You still got 20 there.
Well, that's my feeling. That's my point. When given properly and given in the right spirit, it comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
In a multiplier.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all go through this life with hope, right?
Yeah.
With faith, but it's really hope, faith built on faith and hope. And you're like, well, you know what? Maybe it's real. Because look how it worked out. When you had the faith and you had the hope and you did it, and look at how it worked around.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it is real. Maybe God does work in mysterious ways and has a plan, you know?
Yeah, right. Yes, indeed.
Not to be too spiritual about it, but there is that. I thought about it, and I thought, well, how could I have given away $5 million and still have what I have?
Yeah.
It almost seems impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's a metaphysical God's economy. It's upside down.
Right?
It's counterintuitive in some way.
And you think, you know, does the left understand this part of how capitalism can work with people with joy in their hearts and the right spirit?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they don't. Maybe they do. No.
Doesn't seem like it.
Anyway.
Oh, it's
a joy to talk to you. Hey, congratulations. I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to hear your story, because it's a wonderful story and one worth sharing. I can't wait to hear the rest of the stories, because if they're anything like this, you've just done a magnificent job. Congratulations.
Okay. Yeah, I'll write it out. I'll send it to you here in the next week or so.
Okay, terrific.
I'd be honored to have any part in that I can, just primarily to help you.
Well, the truth is that I have stories, but I don't have concrete results from many of them. I have, you know, some people I've interviewed that 30% of their book came from this and that kind of stuff. But, you know, you having shared the fact that it was 2001 and it was a supernova idea makes it, are you kidding?
Yeah.
It kind of proves, my brother said, Rob wrote his first book to teach people how to do it, and he's writing a second book to prove that it worked.
Yes.
And so you just proved it, my friend, and there aren't that many people that actually have done what you've done. So.
Wow, well, that's good to hear.
Okay, thanks.
I'll write it up and send it through.
Okay.
This is good. Cool. Thanks, Rob. We'll catch up here in a week.
Yeah, that'll be your homework, so I look forward to it. Okay,
thanks. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.